welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, and welcome to Listen to Older Voices, and the third and final part of the story of the life and times of 64-year-old Pat Grotes. Previously, Pat shared stories of how she coped with undiagnosed dyslexia whilst a child in Britain. Emigrating to Australia in the 1950s, she arrives in Melbourne with her family and lived in what could be considered as very primitive conditions. Forced away from being an artist by her father, she worked hard, but the desire to be creative lurked just below the surface. She meets Vic, her husband-to-be, at a local dance, and quickly knew he was the man for her. Marrying and having children, she decides to paint a wall with a mural, and whilst distracted, her young daughter drinks the terps. Going into convulsions, the young girl stops breathing. Thanks to the intervention of a local doctor, she survives, but the shock turns Pat away from painting for many years. She dreams of a property where she can be self-sufficient and help others. This week, we follow the trials and tribulations involved in finding, losing, and finding that dream property. As things settle down, Vic is diagnosed with cancer and given 8 weeks to live. Pat totally shuts down. But we learn how she copes and follow her journey through Vic's unbelievable and wonderful cure. And there's more. Now, we pick up with Pat talking about how she found their property, their paradise, soon to become Pomburg Farm. So you're driving around with your sister and you see this property.
Yeah, see the property next door. Took a real fancy to it. And I said to my husband, you've got to come and look at this, you know. And he said, okay. So he came up, took one look and went, oh, wow, I love this. So we put the deposit down. Now, in the meantime, a big convention had come up that I had to go to Sydney and work at. And I'd left him to do all the final details. We were up to the stage of... we'd put the deposit down and it was contract time, you know, yes. Sign it, get it all organised. And I said to him, I'm going to have to leave you to do all this. I have to go on this convention. So went up to Sydney and it was somewhere on the outskirts of Sydney because it was right next to a Air Force base. Because the weekend I was there, they were doing what they call night touchdowns, which was a nightmare. But yeah, another story. And... anyway, he rang me late on the Friday. I'd gone up there on the Thursday. I wasn't due back until the Monday. On the Friday, he said to me, he said, you're not going to believe it. And I said, what's wrong? He said, the bank still hadn't organised the finance. And what had happened, we had done a, we'd gone guarantors on a property for our son. And I'd said when we did it, was this going to cause any problems? And he went, no. No, the bank said no, it won't cause any hassle. It caused no end of hassles. So the whole thing fell through on us. And he rang me on the Saturday morning to tell me this. And I said to him, look, I said, I'm sorry. I said, I can't handle this right now. I said, my mornings are starting at 5 and I'm not getting to bed until between 2:30, 3:00 in the morning. I said, I don't want to even know about this. I said, I'm working too hard here. So I turned my phone off. I said, I'll talk to you when I get home. Just turned my phone off and concentrated on what I was doing. I had 4 days in which to have 5 big canvases finished and I needed to be focused on what I was doing. So I came home and I was devastated. And I said to him, I cannot understand. I said, because I am sure that is where we had to be. So I don't understand this. And for the first time, my husband said, come on, I'll take you out and we'll have a look at some other places. And he started looking for land. And I just... get out of the car, put one foot on and go, no. And yet I looked at some lovely places and I just could not settle. And about 6 to 8 weeks later, the estate agent rang me and he said, Patty, he said, the property next door to where you wanted has come up for sale. And I went, the dingy little house with the tin sheds on it. He said, no, the vacant block between them. So there wasn't a vacant block between them. He said, yes, there is. And I'm thinking, I don't remember it. Couldn't even focus on, you know, there being another property here. Anyway, I said, look, I'll tell my husband. I said, but I'll be absolutely honest, I do not want to build another house. We built our first house and it was a really hard slug. And I said to him, I've got past that. I really don't want to build another house.
Yes.
And he went, okay. He said, but I'm not going to put it in the window or even register it. And he said, until next week. He said, I'm holding it for you because I know that's where you wanted to be. I said, okay. So anyway, I told Vic, and the next day I had to go into Melbourne with my sister and a girlfriend. And so we went into Melbourne. I get this phone call at lunchtime, and my husband says, Pat, I'm on the block. What do you think? I went, beg your pardon? I mean, I didn't have a phone that has pictures and things they do nowadays. Yes. You know, I had, had a phone. That was it. And he said, well, you know, it's next door to where he wanted. He said, what do you reckon? I said, Vic, I said, I don't remember it. I don't even remember the land being there. I said, I'm sorry, but, you know, I have no idea. Don't worry about it. So, anyway, he said, okay. So, he rang back half an hour later and went, guess what? I said, what, darling? He said, I bought it.
Oh.
I said, you've done what? I was stunned. We have never, in all our married life, done anything like that. We've always done it together.
Jointly. Yep,
always. Every big decision was always made together. So for him to turn around and tell me he just bought 2 acres of land,
which was a big deal.
Was the it biggest? Ever?
Yeah, yes. The biggest.
Yeah. One, we've got to build a house again, and he's just bought a piece of land that I haven't even looked at.
That's right. And you, in your mind, knew exactly what you wanted. That's right.
I'm just horrified. Absolutely horrified. So anyway, the next day, he brought me up here. There's no gate, it's just wire fence. And I thought, I've either got to climb over the barbed wire fence, or it turned out there was a big gutter going through. So I crawled through the gutter, underneath it, and into the property, and so did he. I took 3 steps onto the property and said to him, oh, I'm home. This is it.
Wow.
And he just looked at me. He said, are you sure? I said, I'm positive. And I just stood there, and I could feel everything that I wanted was around me here. Everything we've done here is just incredible. I mean, recently we had the estate agent that sold us the property came here to do a cheesemaking course with me. And he walked through the door and I looked at him and thought, oh, I know you.
Yes.
I know you, but I couldn't quite...
The context was wrong though, yes.
I couldn't understand. I couldn't work out where I knew him from. And he said, I sold you this place. And I went, oh my goodness. And he said, you know, he said, I drove past it twice. And I said, what? He said, I didn't even recognise it.
Yeah.
He said, this is nothing compared to what I sold you. He said, my goodness, what have you done? He says, it's gorgeous.
Now, it's very difficult. Radio is a wonderful thing.
But you can't see it.
And television is this place, but you can't see it. Yes. So can you just give us a potted history of how you developed it?
Okay.
Because it started with just a blank canvas, wasn't it?
Exactly. Yes. It was just 2 acres of, it was a horse paddock, literally.
Yeah.
And actually, when the papers came through for us when we bought it, it turned out it was the same property that we'd looked at. They'd subdivided it.
Ah, right.
So I was still...
Getting the property that you wanted.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
You got the best part of it, in fact, I think.
It was just the wrong part of it that I was still on, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, it was just grass. It was long grass and gum trees everywhere. That was it. Apart from the beautiful big wattle at the front here. But our first thing was to... cut the grass down because I was worried about the snakes because I had my grandchildren running through the place, you know, and I thought, oh, and they thought the grass was wonderful because, I mean, at the time it was about 3 foot high and they were crawling through it and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, somebody's going to get bitten, you know, I'm a bit paranoid. And so we did that. We cut the grass and then we started rotary hoeing a patch up to put a veggie patch in. That was our main thing. We had to put the veggie patch in so that when we moved onto the property, our veggies were there to sustain us. And we were amazed because things grew just fantastically. In fact, I've got photographs of all these things as we go through. And then we bought the, it was a little kit home that we had put up there, a little, and these are Quaker barns.
Yes.
And that was to be my art studio. So I was still teaching downstairs and we were living upstairs.
Wow,
so,
chaos.
Oh, it was. We climbed over furniture to get into bed at night, and we climbed back over it to get out again the next morning, you know. But downstairs was very organised,
yes,
you know.
Yes, that's the studio. It's the teaching
area. It was
area.
My studio.
That's, right.
That's where I was teaching. It had to be organised, yeah. And we lived like that for 2 years until we got the house started. And we almost got the house up to lock-up stage when my husband was diagnosed with a cancer.
Listen to Older Voices. Revisiting through recollections.
That's put a dampener on everything, didn't it?
It was devastating.
Stopped everything.
Because I was such an organised person, as you've seen when I organise things. I can walk into a committee and go, right, I want a 12-month agenda put in front of me. This is how we're going to do it. This is how we work. And I've always been like that. And I've been president of so many committees, and people nearly have a pink fit when I walk in and do that to them. But that's the way I am. Mm. I'm an organised person. I like to know what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. So for someone to come in and tell me my husband's got cancer and they gave him 8 weeks to live, I just dropped my bundle.
You went
literally
in shutdown mode.
Literally.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a space there of the doctor telling me, and a couple of hours later, that I have no idea what happened.
Yeah.
I think my mind just closed
froze.
Off. And
yes.
And I got to the point where people would say to me, how about you come for tea tomorrow? And I go, I don't know. I couldn't even.
Can't make decisions yet.
I couldn't.
No.
And it got to the point that I would work out, I'd look at the clock and I'd go, I just get through this hour. And I would work that 1 hour. And then I think, maybe I can make another one. And sometimes I did and sometimes I didn't. And that's how I got through those first 2 or 3 years of going through that.
That's a heck of a way to have to live.
It was something that I wouldn't wish on anybody.
Sure.
It's a horrible thing.
Yes.
And even though he has survived that and we've pulled him through, for all that time, I'd lie there in bed at night and I'd think, is he breathing?
Yes.
Is he still there? And I'd poke him to see if he'd move. It's awful.
Yes.
So when he was in the hospital so much, and when I wasn't with him, I'd come here and I'd work out in the garden. I moved great big rocks. I moved mountains of soil. It was my way of surviving what I was going through. And I wouldn't let people help me. I didn't want them
you
touching.
You had to do it.
I had to do
yes.
it. That was my way of coping with what
yes.
I was going through. It was
yes.
either that or completely lose the plot.
Yes.
And I knew that I was like that. So I struggled and kept going. People came in and helped us with the house because they could see that there was no way that I could build it.
No.
Vic was not going to be able to finish
no.
it. And we had family, friends, people from church, people that we'd never met, people from up the street that we didn't know.
Like a microcosm of what's just happened in Queensland.
Yeah.
It's that part of that Australian ethos, isn't it?
It was absolutely incredible.
Yes.
I have never in my life ever had. I mean, I'm quite happy to go out and help other people like that and do it on a regular basis, but to have it happen to
you
me.
You to be the recipient.
Yeah, and it was a very hard thing to accept.
Easy to give, isn't it? Not so easy to take.
Oh, it's very hard to have it given to you. And I remember sitting there many a time in tears, and even thinking of it now
is
emotional, you
yeah.
know.
Absolutely.
That people would do that for us, you know. And it was absolutely incredible. And I got through it. But it was funny because everybody said, whatever you do, do whatever you like on the house, don't touch your garden.
Yes.
Don't touch the garden.
Yes.
That's her sanity. Don't touch it.
Well, they were smart enough to realise that.
Yes. And then, and of course, we had the government in their wisdom and Centrelink and whatever. They decided that because my husband had a short span and he'd got terminal written across his papers, that I then had to go back to school.
Oh, you really needed that.
Oh, I did, yes.
God.
I had to go back to school and get a certificate in something that I could go back to work once he passed on. So, and I was lucky that our daughter is a nurse, so she would come and look after my husband because he had to have 24/7 care while I went to school.
They made you go to school instead of looking after your husband.
I did a course in horticulture. Yes. The school was thoroughly disgusted that they made me do that because I would walk in tears some mornings because he was so bad and I just had to leave him with our daughter. And so I had real problems, you know, coping with what I had to go through. And so they made it a lot easier for me. They, you know, they understood that I was, and sometimes when I just couldn't cope with what was doing, they'd take me aside during lunchtime on my own and catch me up on what I didn't pick up. And I ended up passing with flying colours. I came top of the class. So for all I'm slightly illiterate, you know, all I class as illiterate being, you know, dyslexic. But yeah, I came top of the class because I could understand what I was doing.
It was your thing. I was working in the dirt. That's right.
That was fine. Yes. Not a problem. And then down the back, there was a huge, great, what they call as their compost heap. It was the heap where the plants that were a little bit sick, that were no good for selling because they were deformed and things like that, they would pull them out of the pots and heave them up. And because the people I worked with were a lot of people that had disabilities, mental and physical disabilities, and so it was a big thing for them to reach the top of this pile.
Oh, you're right, they just keep stacking it higher. Yep.
And I mean, it was about the size of my little van studio. So it was a massive great pile, and there was two other elderly ladies there with myself, and once a week we'd go and climbed to the top of this pile and sort out all these plants that they've hurled up there. And I brought home probably about 350 plants, and I think I lost about 12 out of that.
Well, I can assure people, because I've been around Paddy's garden many times, they haven't just grown, like they have thrived.
They have, haven't they?
So in summary, what have you got on your property? As you walk, well, you correct me if I'm wrong, as we walk in, we've actually got most unusual garden, because it's not really a bush garden, but neither is it an English garden or a cultured garden.
It's actually a mixture. My daughter put it down to we have Dutch, English and Australian all in a muddle together. She says we've molted, we put the cultures together. I'm one of these people, I don't like putting things in straight rows. I am not one of these horticulturists that like pristine little gardens.
Yes.
I look at nature and I see the way nature goes, and I think we were given the perfect plan to do it, and I just follow it.
Yes.
People tell me you can't put a garden under a gum tree, and my first question was, why?
It's out in the bush all the time.
They do it in the bush. Yes. Why can't I do it? No, because if you put soil up a gum tree, you'll kill it. Not if you know how to do it correctly.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's done constantly. You just need to look. And I'm one of these people, I believe, in looking at what is around you, see how nature does it, and work with it, not against it. And if you do that, anything will thrive.
And I'm sad to say, if we just take Australia as an example, it's a wonderful example of not doing it like that, how we have fought nature. And I'm, you know, it's a very sad thing, and I'm a little bit uncomfortable saying this, but I suspect that a lot of the problems in Queensland have been caused by our inability to work with nature.
Yes, and it's not just here in Australia, it's worldwide.
Nature's weak, telling you something's wrong. It's nature's weak, telling you in a song. It's nature's way of receiving you. It's nature's way of retrieving you. It's nature's way of telling you something's wrong.
you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices. Turning back time, turning back time, turning back time.
Yeah. The more you fight nature, the more we will have problems. And we have seen it here. I mean, because when we bought it, as I said, it was just gum trees, grass. And the only thing that lived on this property were bull ants and jump jacks. Mm. Every time we used to camp up here on the weekend, and we got bitten every weekend. That was my first thing, was to eradicate some of the bull ants and the jump jack. And start to put in the native trees.
Yes.
So I hedged the property all the way around, which is what they used to do in England years ago. If you wanted to plough a paddock, you put a hedgerow in.
That's right.
The hedgerows were put in to keep the animals
which
there.
Which they're now killing off in England.
Yes.
Yes.
But they were there for a reason.
Right.
The birds lived in it, the rabbits lived in it, the little mice, field mice and whatever. And they cleaned up other rodents that came in.
Yes. Yep.
So that was my first thing, was to put that in and bring birds back in. And I must admit, I cursed to start off with because we had blackbirds galore come through. But it took time for nature to balance itself, to put it all back in. We now have an almost perfect balance here.
You do.
The frogs are breeding well, and there was not a frog on the place when we bought it. And I mean, that is usually the first sign that thing is out of balance, is when you have no frogs.
Yes.
I could honestly say now that we probably have 1,000 frogs on the property.
Yes.
Which I think is fantastic. We have a couple of areas where they're breeding really well, and we watch them, watch all these little tadpoles and these little frogs bounce away afterwards.
Well, you've got a beautiful frog pond, haven't you?
Yes. Yes, that's just for frogs. We've got fish in the other ones, but there's no fish down there. That's just frogs, yes. But we now have possums, we have birds nesting everywhere. We have bowerbirds that come in winter and stay with us right up until the breeding time in spring. And last year we were feeding 18 females and 3 males.
Now, that's more than most nature reserves and nature park can do. And the other thing that strikes me is, if you were telling people, a lot of people this, they'd say, oh, well, then you obviously don't have vegetables and fruit trees, because they'd all be devoured by all these animals. And yet you've got the most wonderful, beautiful orchard.
We grow enough veggies and fruit on the property to feed approximately 6 to 8 people every day. And we've been doing this for a while now. We have just netted the orchard now, because the white cockies devastate everything.
Yeah.
I mean, when the rosellas come in, they'd have one or two and they were fine. But the cockies just devastate things. They don't just eat the fruit, they devastate the trees as well. So we've had to cover it because of them. The vegetables, well, you've seen our veggie garden.
I certainly have. It's alive.
And we bottle it, we dry it, we freeze it. So we constantly have enough food off the property. We have our cow, which we milk when she's calved. Our little bull calf goes for our meat. So off the property itself, we have our meat, eggs, vegetables, fruit.
I buy
the bare basics that I have to buy that I can't grow myself.
Now, you were telling me you did a bit of an analysis recently about your grocery bills.
Yes.
Do you want to share that with people listening? Because it makes me smile.
We actually kept a record of everything that we spent in the supermarket over 12 months. So it went from the 1st of November of one year to the end of November the following year. And then we added it up, divided it by 52, doing it per week of what we spent, and it worked out at $34.37 per week.
I would suspect that there would be nobody listening who could say that their bill was anything like that.
And
that's
amazing. And when you stop and think about it, that's feeding 4 adults in this home constantly. And then we have our son and his girlfriend and his 2 children living in my studio now. So we're feeding 8 people.
In fact, you're actually feeding more, because you also have you're also part of an organisation that brings people into the property for experience, aren't you?
We belong to the Woofing Association, which is willing workers on organic farms, and they come in from all over the world. We've had all sorts of nationalities here, and they're people that want to learn about organic gardening. And you have to register with the association that you are organic, and we are. We don't use any chemicals or sprays on anything on this property. It's all done organically. They come in, we teach them how to grow organically, how to look after it. I also teach them any of the classes that we're doing here. So some of them have learnt cheese making, bottling, how to make jam, preserves. They even sit in here and paint with me as well. So
you really are quite a self-sustained community.
I would like to see the Yarra Valley become more like that. And let's face it, when there is a disaster like we've just had in Queensland, and there will now be a shortage on fruit and vegetables that come from there.
Mm.
It's people like us that, and others that are doing this sort of thing that will end up...
Survive.
Yes.
It doesn't come without work, and it doesn't come without dedication, though, does it?
Definitely not. I mean, I've had people come up and they look at it and they go, "You are so lucky." And I said, "Yes, and the harder I work, the luckier I become."
Funny about that. Patty, our time is up. We could easily spend another hour talking about the gardens and all the things you do, because we haven't even touched upon all your bottling and preserving and cheese making. And I'd like to come back again in, say, another 6 months or so and catch up on all your educational side of things, because that's another little cottage industry you've got going here.
Yes.
But I think our time is up, and I'd just like to thank you so very much for being on Listen to Older Voices. It's been a brilliant, brilliant experience.
Thank you very much.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.